Welcome to the Connector Show, another episode here, Connected with Ruben Torres. I am Ruben Torres. Today we are getting into things here with the nicest guy that will ever punch you in the face, Michael Mayday McDonald. He talks about his UFC career. He's a UFC bantamweight fighter, doing big things, and we're out here in Modesto hanging out with him for a little bit today, and excited to get into this. But before we get into that, I got to let you know about my boy Anthony Medina doing some cool stuff, helping some people all over the place. He's born and raised in San Diego and went to school in San Diego, doing his thing, helping a lot of people, man. So you make sure you check him out at the sdlawfirm.com. Also, make sure you check out Love Thy Neighbor Movement, trying to make some stuff happen across the border, Modesto, San Diego, Tijuana. So make sure you check out the lovethyneighbormovement.com and see what we got going. Make a donation, whatever you can get, whatever we can do, let's make it happen. Here's our interview as we sit down with Michael Mayday McDonald.
Get connected. Be open with Ruben Torres. Connected with Ruben Torres. Yo, if you're C-O-N-E-C-T-A-D-O, you already know about the show, so let's go. It's your music and lifestyle, fashion profile, the entertainment source for everything you want to know about. North to the south, the east to the west side. Stay connected with Ruben Torres worldwide, so let's go. Across the globe, well respected, beasting on the industry. Connected.
What's up, everybody? Another episode of the Connected with Ruben Torres show, the Connected show. I'm sitting here with my boy, Michael McDonald, UFC fighter. I'm actually up here in Modesto, and we just came back from the juvenile hall in Modesto today, Stanislaus County Juvenile Hall. And we had an outreach that we did there together, and dude, it was just awesome turnout. And today I wanted to sit with Michael and just kind of get in his mind and stuff that he's got going on. But thanks for coming on, Michael.
Absolutely, man.
Give us a little bit of your background. Michael's a UFC fighter. You're number five still in the world right now?
Yeah, right now I am.
Yeah. Give me a little bit of a rundown on your background here.
Well, I started fighting amateur at the age of 14 against grown men, and started fighting professionally at 16. Getting paid for it. My mom signed a permission slip, and off I went to the Indian casinos. By the time I was 18 years old, I was in the Tachi Palace, and by the time I was 20, I was in the UFC. Christian, I'm a woodworker. I'm married, you know.
Yeah.
Well, born, you know, raised in Modesto.
One of the things is too, when I first came to Modesto, one of the names I always kept hearing was Michael McDonald, Michael McDonald, Michael. And I was like, dude, he's from here? Like, you know, I remember seeing you on TV, and I was like, dude, I didn't realize that you were from, you know, Modesto and repping mm-hmm. Modesto, dude. So I kept hearing your name. And then finally I had met you when you came to do the cabinets.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, dude, you know, it was just a you know, kind of one of those surreal moments. But one thing that was what was impressive, you know, in meeting you was that you had this passion for woodworking,
mm-hmm.
You know, outside of fighting.
Yeah.
And, you know, most people, they kind of just stick to one thing, and then mm-hmm. you're like, no, dude, this is like my art. This is what mm-hmm. I love to do. Tell me more about the woodworking.
Well, I would say the earliest it goes to is my grandpa, my dad's dad. He used to have a wood shop. And I remember going in there with my dad when I was a kid. I mean, he died when I was like 10 years old. But I remember going in there with my dad and smelling the wood chips and stuff like that. I just loved the smell. He used to make these little wooden toys for us. And he'd make these little wooden toys for us on Christmas. He made his own golf clubs. I mean, he was always just making just stuff. He made his own, like, workstations. And it was just cool. You know, yeah. It was just a cool thing that I always wanted to do. And he died before I could ever go and woodwork with him, and he was a little bit too abrasive of a man, and I was too young to have a relationship with him anyways, you know. Yeah. But I always wanted to do it, and then in high school, when I had the opportunity to get an elective for school, I chose woodshop, and then sophomore year, I took advanced woodshop, and then after that, I took two periods of advanced woodshop, and then another senior year, I took another two periods of advanced wood shop. And once wood shop was all done, after I graduated high school, then I was like, well, what do I do now? I don't have any more wood shop. So I volunteered as an outside assistant, volunteer assistant. And I just went back to the high school, and I would just teach the kids woodworking and work on stuff. And I'd be there for the first three or four periods of school, just teaching kids woodworking and doing it for myself and stuff like that at Grace Davis High School. Then when I had my second UFC bonus, I had a lot of people like giving me opinions of what I should do with the money. You should go do this, you should go do that, you should go do whatever, you know. One of my friends said, oh, you should go buy a Ferrari. You know, I'm like, yeah, good luck with that. Yeah. You know, that'll cover like a down payment and then I'm done, you know, be taken away. But anyways, I decided to say, well, what does God say I should do with my money? Right. You know, and, I started thinking about it that way. And then, I started, you know, reading things like you should plant your fields before you build your home. Mm-hmm. Talking to people around me that, you know, you don't really know when my time is up with fighting, and I should, not only do I love it, but it would be a good backup plan. I mean, as much time as I've put in, I mean, I've put enough time into fighting, you get a PhD in something else, yeah. You know, at any day it can just be over. Yeah. So, this is something that I love, and it was a little bit of an insurance policy for me to invest in my own shop.
Yeah.
And half just out of passion, you know?
So now it's a full blown business that you're doing? What's it called? How do if somebody want to hire you to build something on, how do they do that?
You know, honestly, man, I have done it for pretty seriously for a little bit. I even had a commercial building here in Modesto where I would build custom cabinets and furniture. I mean, I've yet to find something aside from carving. I suck at carving. I can't do that. but I've yet to see something made out of wood that I can't build. So honestly, it's just been anything, you know, I've done anywhere from, you know, what you mentioned that, you know, you first met me when I did all of the lower cabinets for the Soldiers of the Cross Clubhouse.
Yeah.
And I just did those for volunteer. And someone needs to do it, you know, so I'll do it. You know, I mean, what good is there of a cabinet maker to be a part of the club, and I'm not willing to make the cabinets the club needs. So I did it. You know, and I would just, it would just be friends and family, really, or people on my, that would follow me on Facebook or locally or something like that, who would see my work and say, hey, I have a crazy idea. I've run this by 10 cabinet shops. No one will take this deal, this job on. They say it's all crazy. And I say, I'll do it. You know, those are always the ones that I love. Just the crazy, that's skillful cool. ones that not a lot of people like to take on. So it's not even that, like, oh, I like to kind of dabble in woodwork. No. I'm good at it. I love it. And I've yet to find something that I can't build. So I do love your work.
And it's awesome. And by the way, I'm going to put you on blast here a little bit. The money that you're getting paid to do these cabinets, you donated your money, right? To, was it a ministry in San Francisco?
Oh no, I didn't get paid at all. I paid for the material, everything with this.
Oh, okay, so, See, I heard. Oh yeah, you know, he didn't even want the money. And
yeah, I told them yes. I told them take the money that they would have paid me.
Yeah.
I said just take that and go give it to San Francisco City Impact. Wow. Is what I said.
And so this is a ministry that you've been dealing with for a while, right? I think it's a yearly event that you guys have down there?
Yeah, you know, I didn't go this last year, but for a while I was going down there quite often. My friend Ryan Tobar, he would hang out there all the time, and we'd go and, you know, just serve. We would go and speak. They have, you know, halfway houses, recovery houses. They have schools down there, church services, outreach program. So we would just go down there.
And what is it exactly?
San Francisco City Impact is it's kind of like the same thing we got going on here at the Modesto Gospel Mission. Mm-hmm. It's a place where people, first off, it's a school. Yeah. So, and a lot of the kids there, they're just poor kids. It's not like a private school. It's just, it's almost like a volunteer school for these kids in the ghetto. You know, it's also housing for people who need it. Like I said, it's a halfway house. It's a recovery house. I mean, there's a lot of things that they do. They have church services there. They feed the homeless. It's a huge ministry in San Francisco that's just dedicated to outreaching and taking care of primarily the poverty-ridden people in San Francisco and downtown.
Wow, that's awesome. So you didn't go this last year. You went like 2 years before
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. I think it was about a year and a half ago. Last time I was there, me and Ryan, we put on this little, what is it? I mean, we just pulled out a mat and we just took the neighborhood kids from the ghetto and we were just like, hey, you guys can just get over here and then you guys can put on gloves and, you know, fight me and Ryan, you know, and cool. And then afterwards go over there and, you know, listen to us talk about Jesus is basically how it happened.
So tell me about Ryan. Was Ryan like your prodigy? Like, is that he's someone that you brought up?
Cause not exactly.
I met him through you.
Yeah, Ryan's a good friend of mine. He's a teammate of mine. Ryan's actually been training martial arts for a long time. He actually started in Iowa when they had the Militage camp. That was a really big like back in the day. I mean, that was the biggest name in all of the world when it comes to training facilities, is the Militage camp. Mm-hmm. And Ryan's from there. You know, then it's a lot of drama of what happened to it and all this kind of stuff. But basically, he trained with a lot of UFC legends back in Iowa. And then he moved over here, and I just did everything that I can to help him. You know, he didn't have any pro fights when he came here. He just had a bunch of amateur fights, but he'd been training for a long time. And then when he came over, I think even at the time, I had like, you know, 16... pro fight, something like that, in the UFC. Not all in the UFC, but I was in the UFC and stuff. And so I just took it upon myself. He was a really great guy, so to just be there every way that I can. Yeah. And he just turned out to be a great brother of mine.
Did you train him too for, because he had a fight, was it Bellator, I think? Or?
Yeah. Well, you know, we actually have a training facility where it's not even exactly, you know, I train him or someone in particular trains him. It's more of us teammates all train together, really. And if there's knowledge that I can share with him, absolutely, I'll pull him off the side and try to help him as much as I can and give him personal attention. But most of the time, it's just, no, we got classes going on. We got, you know, pro fighting training sessions, stuff like that. And it's just everybody gets together during those times and we'll all train together.
Yeah. And so you're training kids or what? So you're here and you have a school, right?
Well,
is it your school?
No, it's not my school. We had a little program school, but we just took all of our students. We took them back to Oakdale and May. Yeah. Oakdale and May is where I was basically taught everything that I know. My head coach's name is his name's a tongue twister, so if I'm not prepared for it, it'll get me stuck. Professor,
we'll Google it later.
Yeah, Professor Tom Theophanopoulos. And
I couldn't say that if you paid me.
Don't ask me to tell you his full name. That's a big one.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, Tom is an abbreviation. That's not even his real name.
Wow. So but what nationality is that?
He's Greek.
Greek.
Yeah, he's
that
Greek.
That explains it.
All right. Yeah. So that's my home gym, and all of my competitions that I've had have all been taking place there. So that's kind of like our home, where all the fighters, that's the home base that everyone returns to. Right now I teach a kids class down there, an advanced kickboxing class. I used to teach a lot more. I used to teach the kids kickboxing. I used to go to Merced to teach the kickboxing and jiu-jitsu at times. So I've taught a lot at different times, but right now I really took a step back, because if I'm teaching the class that I'm supposed to be training in, then I'm not training in that class.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, you can structure it so you're training during the class you teach, but it was just a little bit too much. So I took a step back from teaching so that I could train full time. And then any teaching that I have taken on has been in the middle of those spots where it doesn't conflict with my own training.
So who trains you?
You know, again, I wouldn't even exactly say it's somebody like teaches me, you know, something about MMA. It's not like, it's not exactly like football or baseball, where there's people at the top who've been there, or even boxing.
Yeah, but there's got to be coaches. And
yeah, there are coaches, but it's not like someone's been there at the top and now can show me how to get to the top, because the sport of MMA is still a new sport and people are still trying to figure out what works even to this day. Mm-hmm. So the people who were at the top, let's say even 5 years ago, they can't take you to the top anymore. So they can only show you, get you to, like, you know, 10 steps behind the top. And then up until that, I mean, it's all about just getting together with people who are on the same path and figuring out together, you know. So Tom is my head coach. He's the head coach of the entire gym. Mm-hmm. And I would say that you could probably credit the majority of the knowledge that is contributed to Tom. My older brother, Justin Smitley, is the head kickboxing coach. Mm-hmm. And I would say that Justin is probably my best training partner. You know, so it's not even exactly about coaches in this sport of MMA, because like I said, no one can take you to the top. Only because the people who were at the top, like I said, five years ago, they're not there no more. Uh-huh. So it's all about getting together with the guys on the same path and just figuring it out together. Uh-huh. So that's I would say the like the foundation and the structure in which I think works in general in MMA right now.
Well, what's your thoughts on like the state of MMA right now, of where it's at, especially in UFC?
Well, there's many different kind of topics I can take during that, whether it be like competition, money, promotion, media,
the show, the whole thing, because it's kind of veering towards like the WWE days. Like, there's a lot of that excitement and a lot of that show and that hype, you know.
You know, this is something that was very difficult for me. I've learned that MMA is not like, let's say, football. It's not like many sports, but I'll just use football as an example. Just like no one can take you to the top, there are people like head coaches who can take you to the top in football. You can't in MMA. Another thing about MMA is it will never be strictly about competition, and that's a frustrating thing. Mm-hmm. In football, you can just show up and you can be like the worst promoter, like the most socially awkward guy, most unmarketable guy in the world. But if you're a great football player, you're going to be taken care of.
Yeah.
And that's all you have to do is just play football. And you don't have to be a businessman. You don't have to be smart. You don't have to do anything like that. You just play football. You just be the best athlete you can be. That's not the way it is in MMA. And it never will be.
Now you got to have mic skills. And
yes.
Like you got... What's the dude right now on top?
Conor McGregor.
McGregor, dude, and he's got the mic skills,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, that guy should be on WWE. Like, that dude is on top of it right now.
Absolutely. So
what's your thoughts on him?
You know, I've met him personally, and when I met him, he was not nearly as vocal as he is now.
Right. Do you think it's just for show? Like, is that?
Well, I don't want to exactly make judgments about his character, but I can say that when I met him, he was still pretty charismatic, but he was a cool guy. You know, just a regular guy, you know, that talks a lot to make the money that he does, you know. So
I like watching him though. He's
definitely exciting.
Yeah, he reminds me of like The Rock back in the day and you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah. I like that. I like watching that. Is he somebody that you would either think about getting in the cage with, or is that in the cards here at any time?
No, he's not even in my weight class. But I mean, as an athlete, you're ready to step in there with anybody if it's so be, you know. I mean, so if it calls for it, absolutely, you know. But yeah, I highly doubt that, because he's in another weight class, and I don't think he's getting any lower, and I'm probably not going to move up.
So what weight class are you at?
I'm at 135, which is the bantamweight division.
Man, I can't even remember the last time I weighed that.
Well, I only weigh that like a couple times a year. So I don't walk around. I walk around like 150 something.
Wow.
Yeah, I cut the weight that day.
You know, I had written some about you a while back where I was like, dude, Michael McDonald, he's Mayday McDonald. He's got to be the nicest guy to punch you in the face. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, dude, how could this guy be a fight? How could this guy have like any anger in him to want to fight? But you don't ever fight angry.
No, not at all.
You just, to you, it's just...
It's competition.
Yeah, it's competition.
Absolutely.
You ever get like maybe somebody like off the street, like, hey, tough guy, you want to fight? You ever get approached like that?
Actually, no.
No?
No. You know, I've seen with these things, and this isn't just I'm not exclusive in my situation. This is just people in general. People are looking, like people who want to fight, they're going to look for the best target to do that. All you got to do is make yourself known that I'm not a smart target. is a better target, you know. And as long as you can communicate that through body language, yeah. So as long as you, and even not aggressively, often, you know, the people who want to fight, they'll fight anyone who gives them a dirty look. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just about communicating that, and like I said, not even in an aggressive way of just not coming off as someone who is either satisfying or someone that you would want to fight. Yeah. You know, like, oh, that guy's in a good mood. He's not in the mood to fight. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Or he's not looking at me. I'm going to wait for someone else who's walking hard, you know, and standing up tall, you know. So the people who don't know me, that has usually, my whole life, kept me from, I've never had a fight with anybody that I didn't, like, that I didn't know. I mean, I've only been in a couple street fights in my life, but I've never had really problems with anyone that I don't know. And the people that do know me, I'm usually
not too
much of a jerk,
anymore.
You know?
So, I don't know anybody who would want to fight you.
Yeah.
So you keep it in the cage.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So yeah, how many years have you been in the UFC?
I think I got there at 20, so I think 4 years now I've been in the UFC.
Yeah. And what's your, for those that don't know, what's your scorecard up to now?
I'm 16-3.
16-3.
Yeah.
And your last fight was with Faber, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so you got a rematch coming up with him at any time, or
no? Not right now.
Anything in the future coming up?
Yeah, it should be. You know, I was actually expecting to have something in writing, like scheduled already. Yeah. I was expecting that a while ago, actually. But there's been a few delays. I mean, it's just kind of how it goes. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that I have to rely on and have to coordinate with. It's not just like, oh, I want to fight that day. It's done. You know, it has to be the right opponent, the right venue, and all the conditions have to be right from the UFC side to my management side to home life. Everything has to be adding up. You know, so I thought it would add up sooner, but it's not. It's more looking like late November, early December, something like that for me.
Okay. And what is it like for you to get in? What kind of mind state do you have to get into before you fight?
The best way I can describe it is confidence, confidence and faith. You can have confidence in anything, even things that are stupid and you shouldn't have confidence in, but making sure your confidence is in the right things. I have confidence in my skill as a martial artist. I think there's a couple of things that you need to, and then I think there's a couple of things that are good, and kind of like the next level of confidence. The first thing is you need to have confidence in your willingness to stay in the fight. You know, you have to be confident in that and know that no matter what he throws at you, you're going to stay in there and that you mentally you're going to be strong. You have to have confidence in your skill, just as a martial artist, that no matter what he throws at you, you're going to know how to counter it, to do whatever you got to do. You have the skill and the knowledge you need. Another one is your strength. You need the confidence in your strength and you need the confidence in your cardio. You need both of those so that you can... just make your body function the right way. And I think another level is if you have confidence in the Lord, it's beyond any other confidence you can have in anything else. And it just gives you complete comfort and complete readiness, complete peace with everything that you do. And I've never, in any of those other things, they can't give you complete confidence and complete peace. Only confidence in the Lord can give you complete confidence and peace. Yeah.
There you go. And I mean, you've been in this business long enough to understand the ups and downs of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about some of the ups, like some of the peaks and some of the valleys, because like, you know, you hear stories of people like, you know, at the top of the game, they got the money, they got the toys and they got all the stuff. And then they hit rock bottom and they try to come back, you know. Tell me about some of the peaks and valleys.
Man, you know, honestly, just off the top of my head, when I'm asked that question, I'm not even sure anymore what the peaks and the valleys are. Right. And that might sound ridiculous, but
you've had it all too. Like you've
oh had, yeah. You've I mean, had, I mean, you've had money when it at comes an early to age. The, when it comes to the surface level stuff, I mean, there's definitely, valleys and highs when it comes to the surface level stuff. But man, this is the best way I can describe it to even start to address that question is, you're low and Lord strips everything from you and you have nothing and you rely on him, and then he gives you these things, and these blessings that he gives you are also complications, and if you're not ready for those complications, they'll destroy you. And every blessing is a complication. You take something so simple as a marriage, and if you are not prepared for that blessing, it will destroy your life. Kids are an incredible blessing, but they will destroy your life if you're not prepared for them. Money is the same way. And all, it seems like by surface level, the highs would be when you get all these things. But as soon as you get all these things, often what happens is the man that you are at the top is not the man you are at the bottom. And that high on the surface is actually a very low point. Where inside, you're not relying on the Lord, and everything gets chaotic and crazy. And it very quickly turns into a physical low as well.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can describe it, even going into that conversation.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's understandable. Now, you're in the business. You get paid for the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what other ways can a fighter get paid off of your character or who you are? Like, I know you were in the video game, mm-hmm. right? Tell me a little bit about that. Like, what goes into these things, and what other aspects of income can you get from being who you are?
Well, I think the obvious thing to say is endorsements and sponsorships. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing that comes to people's mind most of the time. But I've learned that that's actually not usually the best. Even though it's the first one that comes to your mind, the same way that if you're to think about a website or a blog, and you're going to be like, how do I monetize this website or blog? The very first thing you come to is, oh, I'm going to sell advertising space. That's the first thing that comes to mind, but it's usually not the most profitable or the most stable.
Right.
So it most of the time...
It's cool. We got a couple of visitors back here. We got Dan Freeman and Bo, and they're over here counting money and making it rain, and they got energy drinks and they got fight labs and all kinds of stuff going on in the background over there, but it's all good.
So I'm sorry, what was I saying
about advertising?
Okay, yeah advertising. you know, that's actually not the most significant that I've learned. I've learned the most valuable thing that you have as an athlete and in this field is monetarily valuable, that is your name and the reputation that you've established. And you can take that and do anything you want with it. And it's nice if you get money that comes along with it, but the best way that I can describe it is fight money is not very good for life-sustaining money, because you don't know when it's going to be there, you don't know when it's not going to be there, how much or how little.
How long it's going to last.
It's exactly. Yeah. There's so many inconsistencies that you don't understand. And it's not, everything about it does, it screams it's not good for sustainable income. Everything about it screams investable income. Mm-hmm. And if you can learn how to take fighting and make it a supplement to everything that you do, then that is, I think, the key to at least financial stability during this whole craziness, which is the UFC and fighting in general, you know. Yeah. So sponsorships is a good part, and if you can get them, they're really good. Often you don't have to do much work for them, and there are...
It's like putting on a t-shirt.
Exactly.
Taking a picture.
Yeah, often it's supplemental, and it's good because it's easy.
Right.
But I find that the most valuable thing that you can do, if you really want to capitalize on it the most you can, is to take the reputation that you have and get a niche. You know, get a niche little thing that you like to do and go market that, you know, kind of as yourself, actually aside from fighting, and using fighting as a supplement to that. You know, I'll give a rough example. Anyone with a big name and, you know, halfway decent speaking skills can go and get paid as a motivational speaker as an athlete, you know. And that would be something that you can control as sustainable income, you know. So that's the best way that I can kind of try to put it. And then it's all just about being creative and doing it any way that you can, you know. Me, it might be with woodworking. For one thing that I like to make is cutting boards. I make some really, really beautiful ingrained cutting boards. And if I had the time, I, you know, everything in the middle was worked out with that, that would probably be a really good sustainable way to do that, you know, to keep, you know, have a little website and drive people over there and, you know, charge a good price for them because they're amazing and they're expensive even to start with, you know, things like that. Just, almost entrepreneurial ideas that can turn into sustainable. I would say that's the key to, like long lasting, you know.
Well, how does that work? Say if I wanted to get my logo on your shorts or something, mm-hmm. how does that work?
Well, it depends on what organization you're in. With the UFC, it's a little bit complicated, and it's pretty much impossible now. Reebok took over. Yeah, Reebok took over all the sponsorships, and so with the UFC now, I can't wear any other logo other than Reebok on me on any UFC.
How do you feel about that?
Things. I don't exactly like it. I took a pay cut, and there's a lot of people who don't like it. It is good in some ways. And it's bad in some ways.
What are the pros and cons of that?
I mean, well, first off, the con is a pay cut. That's the most basic of it. And then the pros of it is I now don't have to pay someone to go and get sponsorships for me. And I take 100% of the sponsorships now because it's like imagine an animal. If me and a buddy go out and we kill an animal, you know, okay, who did the most work? Okay, we both did it even. Okay, we'll split it down the middle, you know. So you get a part of what you help kill. And there is no management that can raise or decrease my sponsorship money. So now that is off limits to sponsorship or to management companies. Yeah. So I get 100% of that now, and I don't have to pay any of that out. So it simplifies things, and now there's less work to be done. But again, that's a small pro when the con is, well, you make less money now. So you weren't doing the work anyways because someone else is doing it for you. So what does it matter? So
and then you're in the video game as well, mm-hmm. in one of the video games.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. How did that work? What was that process?
It was actually very simple. You actually don't even know you're going to be in the video game until they release it.
So they didn't put those little...
Everybody does body scans. Every single fighter in the UFC does body scans a couple years prior to the next one that they're going to release. Yeah. So the body scans that they used in the video game that I was in, I took those 2 years prior.
Wow.
And I didn't even know that I was going to be in the video game. Yeah. So they just say these are general body scans, whether we want to use it on an animated version of you, whether we want to get you on a video game, make an ad of you or a cartoon or anything like that. They say they just
What did you think of your character when you seen it?
Dude, my character has an enormous forehead. Looks like an alien. I hate my character. I mean, everybody wants to be a video game character, but you don't want to be an ugly version of yourself. I mean, come on. It has to be at least accurate.
Yeah. It was pretty out there. I seen that. I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Dude, what's up with my forehead? Yeah. That's not how big my forehead is.
Yeah, that was kind of nuts, man.
Yeah.
But you've seen all the ups and downs of it, man. And then you know, you just brought up, family, mm-hmm. and that's always a big deal with me. I always, I like to get to the family aspect of it. One thing I got to say that I really respected before, way before any of this, but one thing I was always reading about you was that you were going around, talking to people about abstinence, mm-hmm. and that was a big deal before mm-hmm. you got married. Mm-hmm. And by the way, your wife's right here.
Yes. Halo. Yes, she's here with us.
But today I was like, man, I got to remember to mention that because that was a big deal, man. Going around and you were practicing what you were preaching, and I had read some of the stuff where some people were kind of like making fun of you.
Oh yeah,
and some,
big time.
Tell me about that.
Well, that was a hard thing. It was a very very frustrating. Kind of part, first off, yeah, that was the decision that...
Because you went 3 years.
Yeah, I went 3 years. No, it was longer than that, man.
4 or 5?
Yeah, I would say it's 4 years.
Wow.
4 years of being abstinent by choice, wow. And then me and my wife made that decision together before we got married.
You're a strong man.
I was a broken man. Yeah, that's what happened. God broke me. I broke myself, and God saved me, basically. I was just like any other man who doesn't know the Lord. When I was, growing up and being stupid, you go out and you just do what all your friends do, And then I just saw that it ties into my testimony when I had all these surface level things everybody wanted. But yet I was really miserable. didn't know why. And it's because it never was meant to make me happy. Only God was meant to make me happy. And I see that these things that I was actually putting in his place were, you know, out of his will, were destroying my life. Right. And I started going to a program called Celebrate Recovery here in Modesto at Big Valley Grace. Mm-hmm. And I still go to that program when I can. So that's been 5 years now of going to Celebrate Recovery. And I love that place. And, you know, I'm a broken man, just like everybody else. And that was one part of my walk that I needed to do. Mm-hmm. So that I could follow the Lord, and I could stop being miserable and stop getting the negative consequences that come along with sin. I mean, yeah. God doesn't punish us for our sin anymore. He already saved us from it, but he set up consequences for our sin. And when we sin, we have to live with those consequences, even if we're washed clean. You know, those consequences suck. You know, so that's something I just had to get out of my life.
So, there of course, there was some negative stuff that went around. Yeah. People were saying some stuff. Mm-hmm. But there had to have been a lot of positives, too, right, to that?
There were. But, you know, man, if you have 50 people saying how much of a jerk you are, and you have 50 people saying how good you are, often you'll look at the ones that are bad. Yeah. So it's hard. It is hard to even look at it at all. When half of them you see are bad and half of them you see are good. So honestly, I didn't even want to look at it for a while. And it contributed to, like, anger inside, you know, with me and my wife, you know, towards these people that I'm going out and these are the people that I'm trying to save, that I'm trying to do what I have to do to be a servant of the Lord, to reach these people. No. Who are calling me really bad names, calling my wife really bad names, you know. And I think that was the most frustrating thing is I really wanted, I mean, as a man in general, I really wanted to just find where these dudes are, go down and beat their faces in, you know, especially for talking bad about my wife.
Yeah.
I could take it myself, you know, but that was a really frustrating thing that was probably the hardest part. It was seeing people insult her when she didn't even do anything. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that was
neither
that was
did you.
No, I exactly.
Neither of you were.
Yeah, she wasn't even in the conversation. Yeah. I was the one who said it. Yeah. You know, and yeah, that was.
Well, you
that
know
was
what?
Hard.
Hats off, man, and respect, dude, for that. And you know, it takes a real man, dude, to like step up and say it and preach it, and then, like, you know what I'm saying, and live it.
You know, man, when I said that, like the shock of people when I said that I went 4 years of, you know, no sex. Like, it was like I said I went 4 years without air. Like, what? No!
I watched an interview of you, like, there was...
Yeah.
I forget what the dude's name was, but he was holding the mic, and he was, like, he freaked
everybody,
out.
Everybody, they're like, how are you a human?
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's, like, this that's is how crazy. God set us up to function. I mean, yeah. I know we have a very sexually broken society, but, yeah it was... People
and now you guys
amazed.
Expecting a baby sooner?
No, not for a while. No,
I don't know.
Hopefully.
Look at she had that smile. Like,
no, hopefully no kids just yet. Life's still crazy in the UFC. I want a little bit more stability before I go and make it really unstable with a kid.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. That's a tough one, man.
Yeah.
But no, you know, you have that, and then you got the carpentry work that you do, the woodwork. But, you know, you also do a lot of speaking engagements. Mm-hmm. And when I first came out here, I was telling Pastor Micah Berteau about you. And I think you guys hadn't even met yet because
no.
I was like, man, you know, what do you mean? Like, he's, you know, hometown hero, dude. And you haven't even, like, you know, hung with this guy. And he was like, no, man, can you get him to come speak to the kids? And so I'd reached out to you and I was like, hey, man, can you do me this favor? It's like one of the biggest churches here in Modesto. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they would love it if you came to speak to the kids. And there was like, what, like 500 kids there? Or
oh,
there's like
more,
that?
Man. I mean, I would estimate there was like 800 kids there at that Campus Clash event. That was amazing.
That was awesome. So tell me about that, because you brought Ryan Tobar with you as well.
Yeah, that was a great event. That was we had no idea what to expect. Uh-huh. I mean, honestly, we thought it was going to be like a little, like a Bible study group, you know?
Who's this Ruben guy calling me about something? What do you want?
So we thought it was just going to be a small event. I mean, maybe a cafeteria, you know, with like an eighth of the benches, you know, taken care of. Or we thought it was going to be something like that. Well, we get there and it's like in the main sanctuary, smoke, lights, you know, 700-800 kids going crazy. It was like, whoa, I wasn't really expecting this, you know. That was a really cool one. You know, that was a blessing. We really went in there. We had no idea what we were going to say. We had no idea who we were going to be talking to. We didn't know anything about it before we got there.
Yeah, I didn't really know much about it either. I just reached out.
He said
he'll do it. He's going to come.
Yeah, we just showed up and just said, you know what? God, speak through us. Say whatever you want these kids to hear. You know, that was a really
and
cool
And kids
event.
Got saved, man. That was a beautiful thing.
It was a great event.
And then you stayed hours after doing pictures and autographs and the whole thing. And I thought that was really awesome too, man. Mm-hmm. Everybody just... you know, kind of grasp onto you guys. And, you know, it was a trip hearing how many kids here in Modesto have that want to be a fighter and to get into martial arts. Mm-hmm. And I'd seen that the day that they were coming up to you and having that, you know, these conversations with you. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give them?
To people wanting to do MMA?
Yeah, to get involved, to hey, I want to be like Michael McDonald. I want to be on, you know, on the top of my weight division being... you know, a fighter, martial artist, mixed martial artist.
I would have to caution them very bluntly, and basically say, you know, everybody wants to be Bill Gates because he's got a lot of money, and they look at where he's at and say, I'd like to be where he is. And that's how they do it. That's what everybody does with everybody who has things that they want. You don't look at their life; you just look at the things that they have, and then you say, I want what they have. Therefore, I think I want their life. And I would caution people against it because they have no idea the life that came along with it. You know, they weren't there, you know, for the 2 years, you know, showing up and, you know, training for 3 months for a hard fight. And you go in there and you knock this guy out in the first round and, okay, here's $300.
Yeah,
that'll last you until 3 more months. You know, I mean, they don't want to be there through that. They don't want to be there through losing, getting their faces kicked in and public, and they don't want to deal with the public ridicule. They don't want to have to deal with all the things that go along with it. So first off, I would say I would caution them to really take a look at their intentions. And do you know what the life is, or do you just look at what I have or what you see that I have and say, I want what you have? Because if they really did have a good look at the life, and it's a very hard life, and if they did look at the life and they still wanted it, then I would sit down and talk to them about the road to get there. And it is not an easy one. It is not an easy one at all. This is a sport that it will take everything that you have, and then it'll kick you out, leave you homeless and bleeding out on the street.
Yeah.
It is not one for the faint of heart. It is not one for the gentle soul. Somebody who's like, oh, I deserve this, I deserve that. Well, you know what? It doesn't matter what you deserve, and the sport doesn't care. You know, I'm sitting there at the, just as an example. First off, how many people do you think in high school want to be professional athletes or want to be professional fighters actually get to be a professional fighter? Or we can even take a step below that, say an amateur fighter. How many of them actually think become an amateur fighter? Very, very few. And out of those ones, which ones become pro fighters? Very few.
Yeah.
Which ones are good pro fighters? Very few. And out of all the good pro fighters, which ones can string together wins enough to actually get to a good organization? Very few. Which ones of those good organizations can get promoted to the UFC? Yeah. Very few. Then, which ones of you guys are actually good enough to stay in the UFC? Yeah. Very few. And then the last one, which ones are going to be here long enough to actually make a living?
Yeah, the longevity.
And I would even say out of the fighters in the UFC, it's very, very unlikely. I'm even going to like the UFC Summit. I'm sitting there with 500 other fighters at the UFC Summit. We are all employed by the UFC. And I look around at this entire room of people and they all think, oh, I made it. I'm here. I've arrived. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna be successful. I'm gonna be able to provide for my family. I'm here in the UFC. Mm-hmm. And out of those 500 people, I would say about 350 minimum, probably 400 of them. 400 of those people, it's actually, no, you're not. You think you are. You think you're going to be able to provide for your family, but you're really not. Mm-hmm. You're actually going to just disappear. And you're actually just going to get sent home with nothing after you've spent your life into this sport.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to go restart after you're done. And people don't know that. And if my own son said to me, "Dad, I want to follow your path. I want to be in the UFC," I would pray that he changes his mind, because I know what kind of cutthroat sport it is. And I also know that I have what it takes to make it and to do it right, but I see how rare it is. And I caution anyone who even thinks that they would want this life.
Wow. So, I mean, no, that's because that's some deep advice right there. What's the deepest advice that you've gotten? Like, you had to get some good advice jumping into this thing, and you had to have someone, maybe a mentor or someone, but what's the best advice you've got?
The best advice I got was from Ben Hardister. He's a leader of our Bible study and the president of Soldiers of the Cross, the motorcycle gang that I'm not motorcycle club that I'm in. Okay. Yeah, not a gang, okay. Sorry, not a gang. Motorcycle club. And yeah, don't want a bunch of articles being posted misquoting.
Yeah.
Or I guess not Michael, misquoting, but taking Michael out of context.
McDonald's in a biker
gang. Yeah, he's in a biker gang. I'm not even a bike. So Ben said this to me. He said this to me about a year ago. And he said, he gave me an example about his prison Bible studies, the ministries that he ran. And I think he ran that for a while, and it was a very, very large ministry that he ran. And eventually he didn't do it no more. And he gave me a story about it. The heart of the story was bad things happen. Even when you do things that are successful that you've wanted to do your whole life and you finally do it, bad things happen when you take your eyes off the Lord. And when you start taking your eyes off the Lord and start looking at the people around you and the things wrong with them, because when you have success, when you have money, when you have fame, when you have talent, when you have any of these things, these are all things that people around you are going to see that they can hook themselves to you and have a benefit to themselves. Yeah. And 90% of the people around who try to go hook up with you and latch onto your coattails are going to be leeches.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to take your eyes off of God and onto these people that are, they're trying to use you for something.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be all over the place. You have no idea the amount of people or even how close the ones that you are that are going to do it. You have no idea.
Uh-huh.
And so he said to me, "Mike, when you take your eyes off God, this whole thing isn't going to seem worth it. You're going to look at the whole thing and you're going to say, why did I even do this? Why am I even here? I should just hang it up. It's not worth it." And he said, "You know what? If you're not in this for the Lord, you're right. It's not worth it. Keep your eyes on the Lord and he'll take care of the rest. You don't even need to look at these people who are trying to leech themselves to you. You don't have to defend yourself. The Lord will defend you. You don't have to protect yourself. He will protect you. Keep your eyes on him. Keep it in the Word." And Dan Freeman, he says this very well. He says, he points to himself. He says, I focus on God's work, and he points up and down. So I'm doing God's work, and then he'll do my work. You know, and those two things like that, I would say are the best advice.
I think he's doing that right now, anybody. As a matter of fact.
he's over there signaling. So it's just all and I guess you can say that with anybody. And the harder things that you do, the more important it's going to be to keep your eyes on God and not on the people around you, especially when you got stuff that everybody wants.
Yeah, yeah. Some wise words from a wise man. Ben Hardister,
absolutely.
I've had the opportunity to spend some time with him, and he's
an amazing man.
He's an amazing man, and he has a book out too, and he's just, dude's profound, dude. And I love just getting some Ben time and just hearing, you know, hearing what God's doing with him, or what, dude, he's got some crazy stories. But
stories that 99% of people would say you are a liar, and he's not. He's crazy. Not.
Yeah, but you know that's one of the reasons I want to have you on too, man, is because, you know, the ups and downs of everything, you know, in this business, you have a platform, and you're using your platform to spread the gospel. Tell me like about what we did today, like, because not, you know, a lot of people, they get a chance to have that platform and then they just kind of go and, you know, kind of piss it away, you know,
take their eyes off the Lord, man.
So, you know, that's one of the main reasons I was like, man, you know, speaking of influencers, dude, Mayday he's an influencer, you know, not just in the UFC and on your platform, but in your own hometown. So tell me about like what we did today with Soldiers of the Cross.
Well, first off, every month we have meetings for Soldiers of the Cross, and we just sit down.
Motorcycle club.
And we just sit down and we say, how can we bring God to the people?
Yeah.
Church is about bringing, usually about bringing the people into God, into the church. How do we bring the church to the people? Is what we do every month. And today was the time that we were going to go to the juvenile hall here in Modesto. And we got to speak three times to the kids. Right. And it was incredible, man. The more broken the kids were, the more they paid attention.
Yeah.
And the more it impacted them. And they got it. You know, it was none of this whole like, oh, I don't need Jesus. I'm good. You know, I mean,
nobody was too cool.
Oh no, no one was too cool, and everybody knew that they're broken. They're guilty. They're sick, and they need a healer. They need a doctor. Yeah. It was an amazing response. I would say, what, maybe 60 kids got saved today.
Wow.
It was an amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty much like 95% or 99% awesome. Of the kids that were there.
Yeah, it was
got saved.
Awesome. Amazing, yeah. Amazing experience.
Yeah, and you also. You guys do all kinds of stuff outside of even just hometown. You guys mm-hmm. have a girls' school in Cambodia mm-hmm. that you guys were building as well, right? Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about that?
You know, I actually don't. I actually have not actually been a legit member for
some,
that long.
So but I, some been, of the club like help finance, right?
Yes, absolutely. The club together, even the Bible study, has done so much. From stuff in Cambodia to the churches and like rescue missions in Mexico, we're always trying to help out the guys in San Francisco. So we will go all over and do whatever we can, whatever God lays on our hearts to do. Let's just go do it, you know. But yeah, I haven't been here. I was probably in the Bible study, but not a part of the club when they were doing the Cambodia stuff. Or
yeah,
anything like that.
I just got to say for the listeners out there that. The Soldiers of the Cross motorcycle ministry, these guys go beyond ministry. Like they're doing stuff that the churches just won't even do. I got to give it up for what you guys are doing. Just even, I mean, and it's cool because like not everybody goes to the same church and not everybody, but when you guys get together here and it's a group of action.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like, you know, I've heard Ben say, hey, if you're not a doer here, then you're not going to fit in. You need to find another spot.
Yeah.
And you guys like put your money where your mouth is. You guys raise thousands and thousands of dollars to go into action to go do stuff. And dude, just props for doing that, man. So that's lovely, man. But what else is in store for you? What you got coming up?
Well, immediately, I've stopped all my woodworking because I just want to put all my time into fighting, and I'm not fighting. I want to put
and
it
you
in
just healed, right? You
yes, my
couple
my
surgeries.
Yeah, my hand is totally fine. Yeah. So my body is very healthy. So I was expecting already to have a fight in the books, but it didn't happen. It's okay. It's God's plan, not mine. But so I stopped all my woodworking for the most part. I mean, unless it's like a hobby thing, I'm bored or something like that. You know, all of my time right now has to go into fighting and ministry, and then. Woodworking is, I mean, I have my whole life to do that, but now is the time for fighting, for building the platform, using the platform while it's being built is basically what it's the time for now.
Yeah.
And then me, just a general statement, it's just preparing for that day, and I've learned that most people think the order of importance for an athlete is your body, then your mind, and then your spirit in that order. It's complete opposite. It's actually the spirit is first, foremost, and the most powerful. And then it's the mind. And then the body's last. And I want to train in that way. And it's completely contradicting everything that the world says about being a professional athlete. Mm-hmm. But I've seen it to be true, and I feel like it's taken me to another level, and that's the way I'm going to pursue it. And so if I have to miss a day of training so that I can go and build my spirit, I'm going to do it. If I'm not feeling like I'm not feeling comfortable today, something's wrong, that I'm going to stay. I'm going to train my mind. I'm going to train my body. Yeah, I'm training my mind and my spirit if my body needs a rest. Right. You know, I'm not going to, if someone says, hey, we need you to go speak to some kids over here at a church on Wednesday. Well, that's one of my best training nights. Too bad training. I'm going over. I'm doing ministry. God will bless everything that I do when I stay as a servant to him. So that's what's going on with me.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And how can someone get in touch with you?
On my Facebook. Yeah, my Facebook is the best way. I would say the number one thing that I'm looking to do right now is I am looking to just be a servant to Christ any way that I possibly can. Uh-huh. It's usually done with speaking. I mean, I've gone to Louisiana. I've gone to L.A. and all over here in Stanislaus County.
We got to get you in San Diego, man.
We can go to San Diego, that's probably the easiest way, and that's one of my gifts is speaking, and so I love to do that, and I'm always willing to do that. Any opportunity that I can, I'll be there to speak and serve in that way.
Awesome. No, man, well, thank you for your time, brother. I know you guys probably got to get going. You've had a full day already, but just want to thank you for your time, man, and as always, man, you're a gentleman, and can't wait to see you, you know, fight again. Anything you need from me, dude, reach out.
Absolutely, brother.
Is there anything you want to plug? Anything you want to?
No, just find me on social media on Mayday McDonald, for my Facebook fan page and also my Twitter, and check out some of my stuff. I have a lot of posts about the Lord, and if you want me to speak, let me know.
There you go. There you have it. Well, here we are. We're signing out from the Soldiers of the Cross Clubhouse out here in Modesto, California, Central Cali. And today's episode is brought to you by Fight Labs. On the stage or in the cage, go get your vitamins. Is it fightlabs.com? There it is. There you have it. So God bless you guys, man. Love you guys. Make sure you reach out to Michael McDonald. Get him. Go speak, you know, for the kids at your church or your school, whatever it is. And, you know, like his fan page, spread the word, and show some love. Keep the boy in prayer. Love you guys. Connected. We out of here.